It's gone ridiculous. It's not giving any young people a chance to get on the property ladder on the island. Who wouldn't pay £500,000 for a three-bedroom bungalow?
We look at what our house is going for around the area and you just think, crazy. I mean, it's nice to see your house prices are going up, but at the same time, realistically, how much can you spend?
I do think it's really difficult for people to get on the property market, you know, to get on the ladder, because it's just so expensive.
With an election on the horizon and house prices soaring through the roof, the issue of housing on the Isle of Man has never been more contentious. My name is Lewis Foster, I'm a journalist here in the Manx Radio newsroom, and over the next half an hour I'm going to look at some of the issues that have dominated the headlines over the past few months and find out what it takes to get a foot on the property ladder here on the Isle of Man. Well, house prices on the island have continued to grow and grow in recent years, and during the COVID-19 pandemic, that growth showed no intention of slowing down. Instead, quite the opposite happened. Figures published by government in March of this year showed in 2020, a house cost an average of £310,442. That's an increase of £19,000 on the year before. Meanwhile, if you wanted a flat, that would cost you an average of £154,213, up almost £1,800. In May, my colleague in the newsroom, Alex Watton, spoke with David Crean, the director of estate agents Cowley Groves, to ask why, against what seemed like impossible odds, prices were taking off.
When I was coming back from holidays, just before the lockdown in March last year, I knew about it. I knew about the virus, and I've got emails from my people in the company, and I was really scared. I thought about, this is going to be a really tough year. No buyers and no activity, and God knows where this virus will go. And I saw a number of agents then, at that time, taking sort of staff, look at the number of staff they had and costs and everything. So they were preparing for it. And we knew about this. And so I was scared. And I thought the market was going to go the other way. Now, you've asked the question, why has the market got so busy? And with a lack of properties, a seller's market's turned into a very active seller's market. Why has that happened? And there's a number of factors I can throw in to that, but usually I'd like to give an overall reason. Okay, we had 50,000 new people came to the Isle of Man, you know, something like that. That would be a simple answer. But so if we look at when we were locked down first, there was quite a lot of sales transactions going through the lawyers at that stage. And the government, obviously, departments have to link up with that legal process. But they all went home. So all those sales that happened in the spring of last year remained unfinished or uncompleted. Then you had the lockdown, which posed a variety of interests in people who were habitating flats or too small of a house with the kids running around wild and I'm supposed to work from home. So there were a variety of people who said, well, okay, we need to look at something else. And then the poor people who were in flats and had no outside space, you know, so yeah. And you're pointing at yourself there. I can see that.
At the time, not anymore. Funnily enough, I bought a house since. But at the time, I was in a flat.
Yeah, you're a prime example of that category. Okay, so out they come. So now you've got all the sales that were stopped before the COVID, before the lockdown, in March last year. And then when we came out of it, you saw a variety of new buyers who heretofore hadn't thought about it, didn't realise I need this, I need that. So you add that to the bunch of properties that hadn't gone through. So you have a load of sold boards going up all of a sudden. And then you get some comments from MHK saying there are droves of people coming to the Isle of Man. That was not true at the time. We've had people come in, but the borders were closed. So But that then fueled more of a momentum and the ball started to roll. And then the sellers realized then, I haven't sold my house, might be a good time to sell. So more stock came on, more buyers, more sales. So a very frothy market. Now, there's the actual component parts of how it moved and why it moved. But overall, if you just, it's like a souffle, you know, it rises if you have all the ingredients. And that's what happened.
Against the backdrop of rising prices came accusations that Island estate agents were using underhand tactics to artificially inflate the market. Complaints made on social media suggested some agents were lying about competing offers. A number of people appeared to corroborate the claims too, sharing their own experiences, suggesting buyers were being played off against each other. A claim put to Mr. Crean.
I have no reason to disbelieve it or believe it. I read it and there were a number of comments from other people. So there was just more than one who were complaining about the way they were handled in terms of as a buyer in property, whereby one of them, I'll read one of them for you. I just bought a house. This is from a guy called Dan. I just bought a house through an agent and I was fed that someone else had made an asking price offer. Now, that particular comment, it appeared that there was no other offer. So that's unethical. Estate agents have a code of ethics that they need to adopt and behave with and employ. And so, and if somebody was complaining rather than posting, there are avenues that people can complain and have it investigated if they feel that something wrong has happened in terms of the way they were treated. But you'd need to have evidence and proof of that, obviously.
Well, if the price alone wasn't enough to put you off, just getting a sight of the property you have your eye on can be hard enough. I've heard of properties being sold within hours of going on the market. Director of Crystal's estate agents, Neil Taggart, told me on average, a well-presented 2-3-bed house would receive up to around 15 to 20 viewing requests within 24 hours of it going up on the market. He says when possible, they like to arrange as many viewings as they can in a short space of time. On the day in which we spoke back in June, Neil told me they'd conducted around 15 back-to-back viewings on just one property. But before people even get through the door, a far greater challenge is facing them, affording the property to begin with. Here on the Isle of Man, there are two schemes for those seeking affordable housing, the first-time buyer scheme and the mid-rent scheme, the former being the only one through which, in theory, you could eventually own the property. However, the more I looked into the first-time buyer scheme, the more it became apparent through testimonies and anecdotes of friends that it simply wasn't workable. With this in mind, I sought the advice of someone who could explain how people can afford to get on the property ladder. So I sat down with Director of Financial Options, Paul Chase.
The very first thing that they should do is they need to establish what they need to have cash in cash terms to be able to then buy a property. We do now have two lenders that are offering 95% lending. So that basically means that instead of saving for this 10% or 15% deposit, you can now buy a property with a 5% deposit. But obviously, you need to get to that 5% deposit. So that's key. Even if you were to use the government first-time buyer scheme, that also requires a 5% deposit. So that's your first stop, is to try and get that cash together. Other things are, don't take out unsecured loans. You know, if you're looking to buy a property in the next 1, 2, 3 years, the fact that you take a car loan, it's great to get a new car, but that £300 or £400 a month is actually then going to have a knock-on effect of what you can borrow. We're really looking, someone at 22,000, probably 6 times that income. That's the absolute maximum. Majority of the banks are more like 5 or 5.25 times that income. So in reality, you're not going to get up to the level of a house on that sort of a salary. So even more reason to actually save up more of a deposit if you can do. I mentioned the first-time buyer scheme. That can help people out around that sort of level. But it is limited and it is capped with a set price on the choice scheme, which is the one where you use the open market. It's actually capped at £190,000 as a purchase price for a property where there'll be two adults or an adult and a child. Have to be a child involved in that. For single people, it's actually capped at 165 and the middle range, if it's a couple, is 175. So there are no properties for that level. So the first-time buyer scheme at the moment, I think, needs significantly revising and someone to have a look at that.
Okay, do you expect somebody to look at that? Because it's a hot election issue at the moment. Every candidate that's declaring their head is saying housing is a big issue, we need to build more houses. Other people have vastly different ideas.
Yeah.
But do you think something more urgent is required right now?
Yeah, I mean, we see the headlines in the UK. The government is coming out with the Help to Buy schemes. They restricted stamp duty for a period of time to allow people to get onto the ladder. Our version is the first-time buyer scheme, and I have been talking to people over the last few years, and the new scheme was brought in back in July 2014, and so few people have actually been able to utilise it, given the rules that are and how it dictates who can borrow and who can't, that it really does need revising. If the government's serious about helping first-time buyers, then that's the place to start. If we can come up with some sort of a help-to-buy scheme different to the one we've currently got, then yes, I think that would be a good start.
So there we have somebody who's been in the industry for more than two decades saying the first-time buyer scheme just wasn't working. So facing enormous house prices, an extremely wealthy, competitive market, and the only support on offer described as completely broken, it's perhaps no surprise that the number of young adults leaving the Isle of Man is growing and growing. Studies by demographic analyst Paul Crane showed for every one person aged between 20 to 29 that moves to the Isle of Man to leave. I sat down with Paul earlier this year.
In this position here now, the vulnerability of young people leaving and the births falling, we will see a gap like this, a fall of 35% in the number of births. In the island's population structure, the pyramid that you get showing the age and sex structure, that gap is still going to be there when this group are reaching 70 and 80. And it will affect the number of children they have. You know, OK, they'll be supplemented by movement in and they will lose movement out over the years. But fundamentally, a third fewer in this age group is going to pass up the pyramid. So it's going to be around for a long time. And it will affect us as that group would have been going into the economy. They're the people who would have been paying higher taxes, working, etc. If you imagine that it bounces back in the next few years, well, that might not make it so bad. But where we're at, there's no evidence that that's immediately around the corner.
So how do we look at bouncing back? Because you've mentioned here, according to the UN, two-thirds of countries in Europe have introduced incentives, measures to bring to encourage people almost to have more children, to stay where they are. With sort of recent headlines about struggle with first-time buyers, particularly on the island, does that kind of thing concern you? And should we be looking at more incentives for young people?
Really, we need a clear picture of what we're trying to achieve. You know, are we looking to grow the economically active population? Are we looking to grow the population? Do we want to improve the dependency ratios so that we haven't got so many older people in relation to the younger people? Because at the moment, we're growing the older population and we're seeing the younger population declining in every way. The cost of living here, the cost of housing, the cost of childcare. Talking to a young mum yesterday who's got a one-year-old in nursery five mornings a week, paying $800 a month. You know, is she going to have a second child anytime soon? She can't afford that. She's still working at the moment. So if you look, I think it's harder than ever for young people to be raising a family. And that's certainly true here in the Isle of Man. It's true more generally. And as time goes forward with this decline in fertility, people in this age group are going to be difficult to attract in because there's fewer of them elsewhere as well. So the vulnerability is there.
We need to remember that behind the headlines, rumours, billboards and lofty statistics, there's real people trying in vain to find a home of their own. Lee Quirk is an aerospace engineer and RNLI volunteer who's been trying over the past 2 years to buy a property in Douglas through government's first-time buyer scheme. Lee moved away from home at 16 and at the age of 32 has taken the step many his age are doing. He moved back in with his parents.
I've got friends in Northern Ireland who can buy a three-bed semi-detached house for £115,000. And you hear sometimes over here that, oh, it's because where we are, materials cost more to get here and so on, building supplies. But if you look at it, you've got Northern Ireland and Ireland who are even further than us and the materials are coming from England. They're cheaper. So how does that work?
And you yourself are how old, Lee?
I'm 32.
Have you ever been tempted to leave the island? How long have you been here?
Well, I've lived on the island all my life. Not long ago, I applied for a job to work in Australia.
I know personally, I've got family out there that house prices are amazing over there. Was that an influence?
Definitely, yeah. I've got friends myself there, and they love it, and they've been able to get themselves on the property ladder, and they're good sized houses over there, and they love it.
And you work in the emergency services. I want to go back to your experiences with the first time buyers scheme. You say that's actually been quite a negative factor on you.
Yes, it has. I work for, or volunteer, shall I say, for Douglas Lifeboat. Obviously, I need to be in Douglas. I need to be close to the station in case of a call out. But the problem I'd been having with the first time buyer scheme is that as a single person, I was only allowed to buy an apartment, even though if you look at the government website, it states a single person can buy a two-bed apartment or a two-bed house. Now, I have a dog who pretty much lives outside. Like, he's a husky. He loves being out there. So an apartment is not good for him with the type of breed he is. And it's not good either because it's too small. The government have said that all houses in Douglas are reserved for families, which personally I think is discrimination against single people, because at the end of the day, if you're single, give it a few months maybe or so, you could have a family of your own, or you could be looking into it, you could meet somebody. So I think it's definitely against single people, and there's definitely not enough first time buyers in Douglas. I mean, you have Johnny Watson's Lane. I think there was a couple up by the Horse and Plough, and some in Pull Rose. That's not enough.
So tell me, you're in your 30s now. How long exactly have you been renting for?
I've been on the rental market for years now. Since I left home at 16, I'd been on the rental market. Wages had always been low, so I couldn't afford to actually save. Everything I paid was bills and rent. Now I live with my parents. I've moved back there, so I can save more than renting. But renting is, private renting is ridiculous now. They're charging ridiculous money for small houses. I've seen two-bed houses up for 925 a month, which you can pay a mortgage less than that on a house like that. You could pay maybe £600 a month on a mortgage, and banks need to look at this now, because if you can afford to pay the rent, you should be able to afford to pay mortgage, and you're still saving money if you're paying the mortgage, because the mortgage isn't going to be that high.
Tell me, what's that like? Because that's 16 to move out and start renting. That's quite a young age. What's that like, if you don't mind me asking, moving back in after that time?
Moving in is quite difficult. Being out at that age and moving back in so late on, you've had your independence, and that's what you're used to now. So it's very difficult for me. I clash with my parents a lot, because I've always been independent. But it's the only way anybody can afford to buy a house, is by moving in with family.
Lee's not alone in his frustrations. Shortly after we spoke, more people came out to me with stories of their own about how the first-time buyer scheme just wasn't working for them, no matter how hard they tried. One of those is Georgie Bruton, whose diagnosis of osteoarthritis means she's looking for a bungalow to settle in for later life. Georgie gave me permission to share her story in her own words, voiced here by Rhiann Evans.
I'm currently on the list for first-time buyers, and I was actually pretty lucky to get the mid-rent scheme house also. However, the rent on the mid-rent scheme houses is £660. When it's just one person saving, this is pretty much non-beneficial, because if needs be, you could just go into a one-bed studio flat for less. Now, I rented with my boyfriend, so for me it wasn't too bad, and I was still able to save some funds, but sadly we had to leave for personal reasons. We've stayed on the first buyer's list, and I now have the money for the deposit and legal fees. However, I now wish to buy a property on my own in my name, with just my name on the mortgage, and my partner live with me. And this is where the problems have arisen. So a single person won't be offered a two-bed house, as they're prioritised to families. If you have a partner, it must go in a joint name and not just one person, which, you know, I think is unfair. And they don't have any bungalows for disabled people, such as myself. I can't have children naturally. I'll need IVF or adoption. And it seems to be, you know, no kids equals no house. I can get a mortgage, I have the deposit, I have the legal fees, and I would only need to borrow 20.4% out of a maximum 30%, yet I still can't have the two-bed house. And on top of that, in a joint name, me and my partner earn too much money per year for the joint first-time buyer's ridiculous annual amount limit. If I buy on the open market with the government top-up grant, I can have around £156, and this can buy me a basic flat or similar, which I don't want. The bank will only give 5 times my salary. House prices have risen dramatically. People don't want to buy and live in flats with nightmare neighbours. And bungalows are almost non-existent for a first-time buyer, so it's all just a big disappointment, basically, unless you have loads of money. I've been emailing and emailing first-time buyers to try and get some answers and clarity, and they've just ignored me because they work from a list. And if you're on that list, they work in order of who they offer a house to. So you can't choose where you live. You just have to accept or decline wherever you're offered, which in my opinion is fine for a council house. But for a buyer who will potentially live there forever or for the foreseeable future is totally unfair. You have to wait for them to speak to you. You can't call any of the shots. And if you question them or pester them, then you just get ignored. Our private rent lease ends in August, and we got a bargain rent price of £700,000 for a two-bed cottage. If we give that up in July, which is when we have to let our estate agent know by, we'll be back at my parents' house for God knows how long, as the private rent has now increased to a shocking amount for two-bed houses. Yet, still, I have to wait for first-time buyers to ring me.
Well, that's it from me. Thank you very much, and I hope you've enjoyed this programme. A special thank you to Paul Chase, David Crean, Lee Quirk, Georgie Bruton, and every estate agent on the Isle of Man I've annoyed with research inquiries over the past month. I've been Lewis Foster, and this was my Island Life programme, looking at what it takes to find a home on the Isle of Man. This programme will be available shortly as a podcast at manxradio.com.